Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At the latest January 6th hearing, witnesses detail efforts to convince then-Vice President Mike Pence to overturn the presidential election results. We'll have the key takeaways. And why the Fed is more likely to risk recession rather than higher inflation.
The Fed is now doing what I call risk management in reverse, where the kinds of big rate moves that they used to reserve for recessions, they're now using in an inflationary environment in an upward direction instead of a downward direction.
Plus, how higher interest rates could affect your financial planning. It's Thursday, June 16th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Today's hearing on the January 6th Capitol riot focused on efforts to convince then-President Mike Pence to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. Much of the testimony centered on ideas advanced by John Eastman, a conservative constitutional law professor and architect of the plan to stop Congress from certifying the election results. Our congressional reporter Siobhan Hughes explains.
We heard testimony about an Oval Office meeting on January 4th that has been previously described, but not on a firsthand basis, in which John Eastman offered up two competing approaches for how to overturn the results of the elections, either by suspending the January 6th joint session of Congress so that states could come up with some new vote preferences, or else by outright rejecting the votes from some disputed states so that the remaining votes would make Donald Trump the president. We heard the legal battle that went on behind the scenes where Vice President Pence's counsel, Greg Jacob, went toe-to-toe with John Eastman over why Mr. Jacob thought that his approach would not pass legal muster.
I raised the problem that both of Mr. Eastman's proposals would violate several provisions of the Electoral Count Act. Mr. Eastman acknowledged that that was the case, that even what he viewed as the more politically palatable option would violate several provisions, but he thought that we could do so because in his view the Electoral Count Act was unconstitutional, and when I raised concerns that that position would likely lose in court, his view was that the court simply wouldn't get involved.
What was really notable is that we heard this testimony from somebody who was in the room for a lot of these meetings. This was not a secondhand reporting. It was from somebody who was a direct witness to these events. We also learned the degree to which Mike Pence himself was in personal danger. We saw a deposition in which his chief of staff, Mark Short, was so concerned about the risks to Mike Pence that he had a conversation with the Secret Service the day before January 6th. And we saw how close a mob came to getting to Mike Pence, coming within about 40 feet of him before Mr. Pence was rushed away from a room off of the Senate floor and into what amounts to an underground bunker, but according to photographs that were aired during the hearing, looked to be a parking garage, a dusty, cement-floored parking garage.
Eastman's lawyer did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Pence wasn't watching Thursday's committee hearing. He spoke with the Wall Street Journal in a telephone interview.
Well, look, January 6th was a tragic day. But thanks to the courage of law enforcement personnel, by God's grace, I know we did our duty that day, upholding the Constitution and ensuring the peaceful transfer of power.
Representative Benny Thompson, chair of the January 6th committee, says the panel will likely invite Virginia Thomas, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, to speak before it. A person familiar with the matter said the committee has emails between Thomas and Eastman. You can find our full coverage of the January 6th hearings at WSJ.com. A big downturn on Wall Street undoing yesterday's gains. On Wednesday, stocks jumped after Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell hinted that the central bank's 0.75 percentage point interest rate hike might not be common. But today, all three major indexes ended the day with significant losses, and the Dow dropped below 30,000 for the first time since January of 2021. Our markets reporter Matt Grossman says investors are reevaluating what the Fed's plans will mean for markets.
Today, a lot of people in the market are taking a step back and kind of coming to terms with the fact that the Fed is still going to have to act very aggressively to get inflation under control. In the past, a lot of times in similar situations, they haven't really been able to achieve that soft landing that everybody's been looking for. I mean, that's a real challenge. And so I think you're seeing a sell-off today as investors really think about the fact that a recession is far from impossible.
The Dow ultimately ended the day down 741 points, or 2.4%. The S&P 500 lost 3.25%, and the NASDAQ fell more than 4%. Meanwhile, U.S. mortgage rates have reached their highest level in more than 13 years. The average rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage rose to 5.78%, according to mortgage finance giant Freddie Mac. The rate was around 3.11% near the end of last year. Mortgage rates are closely tied to the 10-year Treasury yield, which tends to move in tandem with the Fed's benchmark rate. We'll talk more about how the Fed is balancing rising inflation with the risk of a recession later in today's show. Meanwhile, the Bank of England has raised its key interest rate by 0.25 percentage point for the fifth straight time. The UK central bank has stuck to a more cautious pace of rate rises than the Fed, but signaled larger moves may be needed to tame inflation. Like in the US, consumer prices have surged in the UK because of higher energy costs caused by the Ukraine war and a possible trade dispute with the European Union. Elon Musk spoke directly with rank-and-file employees of Twitter for the first time since announcing his plans to buy the company for $44 billion. Musk answered pre-submitted questions from staff who asked about layoffs, the company's work-from-home policy, and what his role in the company would be. Our reporter Deepa Seetharaman says Musk also addressed questions about content moderation, an area where Musk has been critical of Twitter.
He did draw this distinction between freedom of speech and freedom of reach. You know, like, let people say what they want, but don't amplify the things that are bad, which is, you know, pretty common perspective and a pretty common for framework for a lot of content moderators over the last 5-6 years. But the devil's in the details, and he didn't really get into details.
And Tesla is raising the prices on some of its cars by as much as $6,000. The increase comes as the electric car maker faces rising costs along its supply chain. And it also comes after CEO Musk announced plans to cut 10% of its salaried staff. Coming up, with its steep rate hikes, the Fed is changing up the playbook it's used for decades. We'll explain after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
The Federal Reserve is hoping to bring down soaring inflation by tightening monetary policy and has indicated that it'll take a more aggressive path of rate hikes to do so. This week's decision to raise interest rates by 0.75 percentage point marks a reversal for the central bank, which in the past has moved to cut rates more quickly. But the decision is raising fears that the U.S. could be headed for a recession. That leaves the Fed caught between a rock and a hard place: inflation or recession. So which is better? Joining me now to explain why, barring a soft landing for the economy, that a recession might be the best alternative is our chief economics commentator, Greg Ipp. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot for having me, Anne-Marie.
So, Greg, let's start by defining what a recession is, because there is a specific definition here.
That's right. So in the United States, the decision about when a recession begins and ends is made by a panel of the National Bureau of Economic Research, which is a group of academic economists. They define a recession as a significant decline in economic activity that is spread across the economy and lasts more than a few months. Now, it's not the only definition out there, but it's the one we tend to agree on. Sometimes people will say, well, a recession is when you have 2 negative quarters of GDP growth in a row. Now, most recessions fit that definition, but not all of them. But as a practical matter, those two things tend to go hand in hand. For the layperson, I think you could say any period of time over which the unemployment rate rises a reasonable amount is probably a recession.
That's, of course, though, not to say that the impact of a recession wouldn't be felt beyond that defined period, right?
Absolutely. In fact, it can sometimes take a very long time for the economy to recover and the unemployment rate to come back down after a recession, even though technically you're in a recovery period with the economy growing.
So the decision to raise interest rates by so much marks a reversal for the Fed, which historically has used such large rate moves only when it was cutting rates rather than raising them. Why is that, Greg?
Well, you're right. The last time the Federal Reserve raised interest rates by as much as 0.75 percentage point was in 1994. That's about 3 decades ago. But they've actually often cut them by that much, if not more. Powell himself cut rates by a full percentage point just 2 years ago at the start of the pandemic. Chairman Ben Bernanke cut them by at least 0.75 point 3 times during the financial crisis. And Chairman Alan Greenspan in 2001 cut rates by 0.5 point 8 times during the collapse of the NASDAQ bubble and the 9/11 terrorist attacks.
So what's behind the reversal for the Fed this time around?
Well, let's understand the philosophy of why it used to be that they were so willing to cut rates faster than raise them. It has to do with how the Fed perceives the types of risks they were facing. In fact, Greenspan used to refer to this as risk management. You ask yourself, well, what is the bigger risk facing us now? Is that the economy falls into a deep, dark recession or a financial crisis, or that we have runaway inflation? And so you set interest rates knowing that you probably won't get it exactly right, but that if you're going to make an error, you make an error in the direction of avoiding the worst possible outcome. And the way the economy was for the 20 to 30 years before the pandemic, it always seemed to be that a financial crisis or a really bad recession was the bigger risk. We had, you know, financial crises. We had the terrorist attacks. By contrast, when the Fed asked, well, if we cut rates too much, what's the downside to that? They would say, well, the usual downside of lowering interest rates too much is inflation. But inflation was always low, around 2%. In fact, sometimes it was too low. And so it didn't really seem like they were paying much of a price if they were to overdo it. After all, they would have lots of time and all the room in the world to raise interest rates again. And by the way, for a lot of this period, because inflation was low, interest rates were also low. And that meant that there was always a possibility that there wasn't enough room to cut rates by enough to really help the economy as much as it needed. So all of those kinds of asymmetric risks produced asymmetric monetary policy, where the Fed was always ready to cut rates faster than it was to raise them.
So why the decision to raise them so much rather than cut them now?
Well, basically, the nature of risk management has reversed. Instead of a situation where recession was a much bigger problem than inflation, inflation is now the much bigger problem. In fact, you might say that the reason we're in this situation is because the old approach went too far. Throughout last year, the Federal Reserve kept interest rates low for long, probably too low for too long, because it still thought that the greatest risk was being in a high unemployment, low inflation environment. But we now know that's not true. In fact, we happen to be in a low unemployment, high inflation environment, and that presents us with a very different set of risks. Specifically, the Fed is quite worried that if the public's expectations of inflation go haywire, they could get a situation where people are expecting higher prices, so they ask for higher wages, which leads to higher prices. And the next thing you know, inflation is spiraling upwards. And the Fed finds itself behind the curve, never quite able to raise interest rates by enough. And so to get ahead of that process, the Fed is now doing what I call risk management in reverse, where the kinds of big rate moves that they used to reserve for recessions, they're now using in an inflationary environment in an upward direction instead of a downward direction.
So as the Fed changes its approach, Greg, what could go wrong?
Well, by explicitly deciding that inflation is the risk they want to deal with the most, the Fed is implicitly telling us that it's going to accept a larger risk of recession. And that, of course, is not very pleasant. And in fact, if you listen to Chairman Powell this week, he didn't actually say we're going to have a recession, but he didn't exactly deny the possibility. But he kept saying that the much bigger mistake would be to let inflation get out of control. So I think we're now in an environment where the Fed seems willing to take the risk that it's going to raise interest rates too much, because frankly, raising them too little is a far worse problem.
That's Wall Street Journal chief economics commentator Greg Ipp. Greg, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, as we mentioned, the Fed's decision to raise interest rates is meant to bring soaring prices down. But even if it does, the flip side is that rising rates could make financial planning tougher this year. So how can you protect your finances amid higher interest rates? Our personal finance reporter, Julia Carpenter, has been speaking with experts for their tips.
Just as you should give priority to paying down that existing debt, think carefully about those big purchases. If you were going to have to take on new debt, you know, a mortgage and auto loan, it could be more expensive to do that right now. With auto loans, it's a little different. Individual lenders and dealerships can charge you different amounts, so you sort of have to do your own research on that front. But mortgage rates, we know, typically move higher when we see interest rates go higher. So people should think about how urgent that new purchase is. You know, if you are between houses right now, you simply have to sell your house and then move into a new house right away, you might want to do so more quickly because you'll be able to lock down a rate now before it goes up in the coming months. But if you're thinking, I could buy this year, I could buy next year, I could take out a mortgage 2 years from now, it might behoove you to wait. We're seeing rates go up now. Rates could be lower in 2 years, 3 years. It might be more beneficial for you to sort of change or postpone your plans.
We've got more steps you can take now to make better financial decisions amid rising rates on our sister podcast, Your Money Briefing. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.